I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom. Welcome to the Too Jewish radio show and podcast with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. This morning, Rabbi's guest, Shmuel Rosner, author of Why Am I a Jew? A Contemporary Guide for the Perplexed. And we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. We're now in the midst of the Hebrew calendar month Shvat, a wintertime month in which the rabbis believe trees reawaken and sap begins to flow, heralding the revival of the natural world in the coming spring. Much of our own nation has been in severe cold for a while now, and no doubt is beginning to fantasize about the return of warmth and growth. Tu Bishvat, the Jewish holiday celebrating the New Year of Trees, occurs tonight and tomorrow, so it's a good time both to explore this minor festival and reflect on our tradition's understanding of our role in protecting and preserving the environment. Our responsibility for the earth in Jewish tradition begins very early in the story of creation in Genesis, chapter 2 of the Torah. We human beings are placed on this earth, le'ovda u'le'shomra, to serve it and to guard it. That can also be translated to till it and to tend it, but the meaning should be clear. It is our responsibility to care for the health and productivity of the land, to preserve and care for it. In Leviticus, we're told the earth belongs to God. We are merely sojourners upon it. The Torah also ordains that every seventh year the land itself must be allowed to rest and restore, giving nature the time to recover the productive goodness that comes from the earth. In Deuteronomy, we're commanded, even in wartime, that we are prohibited from cutting down fruit trees of our enemies, from destroying the land's ability to feed people, even when we are at war with those people. This certainly challenges the Israeli army policy of destroying the olive groves of Palestinian terrorists as a form of retribution for their homicidal acts. The rabbis extended this concept, the don't cut down fruit trees idea, into a principle, Baal Tashchit, do not destroy or waste the natural world, which in our time has been understood to obligate us to preserve the gifts God has given us through the beautiful earth. Tu Bishvat is closely associated with the concept of environmental protection, preventing the destruction of the natural world and of restoring the land when it has been damaged by human action. On Tu Bishvat, there's a custom, begun in Sfat in the Galilee of Israel during the 16th century, of holding a mystical Tu Bishvat Seder, a celebration adapting the Passover Seder into a celebration of connection physically and spiritually to the natural world that God created. When this Tu Bishvat Seder is conducted for adults, it's a chance to enjoy delicious wines, eat tasty fruits and nuts, and inspire active work to protect, preserve, and restore our environment. When a Tu Bishvat Seder is conducted for kids, like in our religious school at Congregation Beit Simcha today, it provides an opportunity to alert our youngest to the gift that God has given us in the fruits of the natural world, to begin to develop their consciousness of the need to protect and preserve the earth, water, and air that sustains us all. This is a powerful reminder that we have the unfortunate power now to destroy the health of our entire planet. After years of progress towards avoiding global warming and protecting our natural world for us and our descendants, we are now seeing a tragic, short-sighted, and ultimately disastrous reversal of valuable policies by the U.S. government that is led by the current administration. There is nothing good about destroying our planet. It's the only one on which we know we can live as a species. Increasing our reliance on burning coal, oil, and natural gas speeds global warming and further damages our air, land, water, and climate in terrible ways. Failing to acknowledge our God-given responsibility to protect and steward the earth is, well, frankly, evil. It is morally wrong, and so incredibly short-sighted that it threatens to leave an untenable world to our children and grandchildren. Tu B'Shvat comes to remind us of that profound need to protect the earth, sometimes from our own U.S. government. Now, how unusual is this Tu B'Shvat? Well, the holiday celebrates what might be a uniquely Jewish religious understanding of a moral obligation. After all, what other contemporary religious tradition has a new year for trees? The closest secular analogy might be Arbor Day, a holiday that, well, nobody really observes anymore. For a while, we had Earth Day. That started officially sometime around 1970. It was a way to acknowledge that we here in the U.S. had a critical need to clean up what was then an extremely polluted country. For a number of years, we did major positive work repairing our water, air, and land. And now, apparently at the federal government level, we are actively trying to destroy our own environment. I challenge you, by the way, to remember when Earth Day even falls on the calendar. So, this Tu B'Shvat Jewish imperative to protect the environment, it's real, and it is urgent. Don't let fools confuse you. Global warming is happening right now. Its effects are extremely damaging already. There are small island nations that have had to be permanently evacuated. Natural disasters in the form of incredibly destructive wildfires, floods, and extreme storms have worsened so much that many people in America can no longer find homeowners insurance. Summer temperatures have skyrocketed to previously unknown levels in many cities in our nation and around the world. And please don't say there's nothing you can do, that it's some sort of natural cycle of the earth. We should keep relying on high-polluting coal and oil for our energy needs. There is more than ample evidence that gas-powered cars and trucks are a thing of the past and should be replaced by electric cars. Solar power and wind generators are effective now. Both will only improve in efficiency going forward. There is a lot we can do to stop the destruction of our planet, to slow and perhaps even reverse global warming. There is no reason, save the greed of oil companies and coal companies and their enablers in government, to reverse the successful changes we've made in recent years. We all must work to change these recent deliberate evils that attack our environment back into a real Jewish protection of our natural world. It is a divine imperative to do so, especially at Tu B'Shvat. To play us in this morning, here's a lovely setting of a song of Tu B'Shvat, the New Year for Trees, Hashgedia Porachat.
Shgedia Porachat, Shemesh Pasorachat, Tziporim Mirosh Kol Gag, Mevasrot Et Poef. Shvat hiya hagailanot, Tu B'Shvat hiya hagailanot. The golden sun is shining, birds on rooftops singing so gay to tell us of this holiday. Tu B'Shvat is here now, birthday of the trees. Tu B'Shvat is here now, birthday of the trees. Thank you.
That was Oshi Tugendhat's version of Hashkedia Parachat for Tu B'Shvat tonight and tomorrow. When we return in a moment on To Jewish, our guest this morning will be Shmuel Rosner, whose new book addresses just why we should choose to be Jewish today. Find out when we come back in a moment here on To Jewish.
Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people, an individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort? As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people.
Introducing Taste of Judaism, offering everything you ever wanted to know about Judaism but never got to ask. Who was Abraham? What is the Torah? How long have Jews been around? What do Jews believe about life after death? Where does the concept of Brit Covenant come from? In three upbeat, fun, inexpensive, informative sessions, Taste of Judaism brings the joy of Jewish life and learning to you. You'll study with Rabbi Sam Kohan and learn what Jewish values, spirituality, and community are all about, and have a great sample of delicious Jewish foods. Classes are offered at La Cholla and Tangerine in Oro Valley, and all classes are open to everyone, Jewish or not. Best of all, Taste of Judaism is offered free of charge, but you must pre-register. No cost to you, and the learning is invaluable. Free, but you must pre-register by calling 520-276-5676 or emailing execbeitsimcha@gmail.com or going to www.beitsimcha.tucson.org and signing up. Hundreds of thousands of students worldwide have taken Taste of Judaism. Why not join them? No obligation, just an energetic and great instructor, free food, fun, and a wonderful introduction to Jewish life. Call 520-276-5675 to register for Taste of Judaism, the most popular and effective introduction to Jewish learning and life. Call 520-276-5675 for your very own Taste of Judaism.
We are delighted to welcome the Two Jewish, our guest this morning. Shmuel Rosner is a researcher, columnist, editor, journalist, and author, longtime senior fellow at the Jewish People Policy Institute, JPPI, a weekly columnist for the Jewish Journal in L.A. You may have read his stuff there or at Maariv in Israel. He has written regularly for a host of publications. His previous book was called Israeli Judaism, Portrait of a Cultural Revolution, and his new book is called, importantly, I think, Why Am I a Jew? Good morning and welcome to Jewish.
Thank you for having me.
I particularly like your subheading, A Contemporary Guide for the Perplexed, as you imitate the Rambam a little bit. Tell us what's unique about the current circumstance for Jews around the world.
Well, I think the unique thing is that we are all perplexed. We all live in a 21st century world in which cultures change, and we live within a culture that is, 3,000 year old. And it's often a question, how do you adopt a 3,000-year-old culture to a 21st modern world, 21st century modern world? This is what I'm trying to do in the book. The book is not prescriptive. It doesn't mean to tell people how to be Jewish. It's meant to tell them that there are many ways to think about Jewish questions and many paths to becoming more Jewish or more committedly Jewish, And what I'm trying to do in each chapter of the book is look at the different ways in which Jewish scholars and thinkers and sages looked at different problems and try to adapt the culture to changing circumstances that, you know, that we Jews always had to deal with.
You explore the current situation of Judaism, I would say, from a really fascinating and complex perspective. You're not talking about it politically. You're not simply addressing, oh, there's so much anti-Semitism now, or you're trying to take both a historical and, I think, an intellectual exploration of what Jewish identity really is. If you had to put your finger on what's different now in a world in which Israel exists, in which the diaspora is facing a variety of challenges, Israel, of course, always is facing challenges, what would you say the greatest challenge is now for thinking Jews in this perplexed state?
I think modernity is the greatest challenge, and that's been a challenge for the last 20, 250 or 300 years. Modernity, right, is a time in which religiosity, or the way religiosity is interpreted, is not similar to the way Jews used to interpret their own culture in different times. So I'll give just one simple example. Okay, let's take the holiest of day, the day of Yom Kippur. So for about 1,000 years, during the age of the first and the second temple, from the days of the Solomon to the destruction of the second temple in year 70, Yom Kippur was a day of, you know, in which most of the Jewish practice happened at the temple, you know, sacrificing, all kinds of different rituals that were conducted in the temple. Then the temple was destroyed. And for another 1,000 years or so, more than 1,000, almost 2,000 years, Jews had to adapt to different circumstances. So now they have to reinvent Yom Kippur in a way that's fitting for a time in which there's no temple. Okay, that's fine. This pretty much held up until 300 years ago or 200 years ago.
Let's call it 200 years ago. Sometime around 1800, it all changes.
Exactly. And then people became, you know, more secular. Not all of them wanted to go to a synagogue. Not all of them wanted to fast. Not all of them wanted to preserve Yom Kippur in the same way that their forefathers did. And they faced a dilemma. What do you do with Yom Kippur if you do not feel the need to connect with a God, if you don't even believe in a God? So one way is to say, well, you know, Judaism is no more relevant, no longer relevant. I'm just going to give up on it. But that was not the way most Jews chose to conduct their cultural habits. They chose to stick with the culture, to stick with Judaism, and find new ways to express their affinity to the Jewish culture or to the Jewish people. So suddenly, you know, for example, for Jewish Israelis, Judaism became a thing that is much more connected to their national patriotism than to their religious sentiment. For many American Jews, it became much connected to moral behavior or moral conduct. So they thought about this concept of Tikkun Olam as a mission for the Jews. So Jews had to look for new ways to stick with their culture without giving up on it, while facing the world that is a world that is much changed. You know, you cannot... Rebuilding the temple these days, you know, some people still want to do it, but it will be somewhat uncommon for Jews to do such.
Yeah, I would say so.
In this era.
We will talk much more with Shmuel Rosner about his new book, Why Am I a Jew? And explore kind of Jewish identity in 2026 when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a fabulous Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a terrific array of services, classes, and events this winter and spring. Established 7 years ago by great congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everybody throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org. We welcome members and guests. Call 520-276-5675. Religious school is going great for school-age children or grandchildren. You can join us for our second semester in our fabulous Hebrew school, bar and bat mitzvah programs, Torah Tikes experience, confirmation, and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with terrific Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org to sign up. Beit Simcha's services, classes, and events are open to everybody. Friday night services are at 6:30 p.m., always followed by a delicious Oneg Shabbat Saturday morning. Torah studies at 9 a.m. Services are at 10 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. You can also go to our services on our Facebook page by virtual experience, Beit Simcha Tucson, BEITSIMCHA Tucson. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are taught live and on Zoom. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org. For more about Beit Simcha, to come to services, religious school and Torah Tikes programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation and high school programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses, taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, at Beit Simcha, the fastest growing Jewish congregation in all of Southern Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or a criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O, JewishRadio18@gmail, or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, TOOJewishRadio.com, streaming us from there, or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store, is very popular Jewish podcast, top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 250,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify. Post a rating, review 2Jewish wherever you listen to us. Those comments really help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of Southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We are delighted to welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, for the first time in my life, and I'm not as young as people would like to pretend, or I'd like to pretend, I'm hearing people in America talk about, Jews in America talk about, well, we need to think about where we're going to go next. Meaning America is no longer a safe haven. It's no longer the place we think that our grandchildren can live and enjoy the freedom we've enjoyed. That's a bit shocking. Let's discuss that a little bit.
Yeah, I fully agree with you. I'm picking up vibes like that as well. Definitely the first time in my life. I mean, I grew up in sort of America's golden age of the 50s and very early 60s. Although some would probably dispute the fact that the 60s were a golden age. They seemed that way to me. And the position of Jews in this country was incredibly secure. Nobody really thought about leaving unless they had strong Zionist feelings. And then maybe after they finished college or grad school or whatever, or sometimes when they retired, they would move to Israel. But not as a refuge, just as a choice. And now people are thinking about, where is it safe for us to go? And Israel has slipped down several rungs on that list, and no place else readily comes to mind to replace it.
I know people that have been, you know, talking about Portugal, Spain, places that kicked us out 500 years ago, but now seem like good places to go. I've heard people talking about New Zealand, but after, and people were talking about Australia, but I'm not sure that's a good choice after the Bondi Beach massacre. What do you tell people when you hear those kinds of conversations?
Some variation on the theme, Yatov. You know, it'll be okay here, because at some point the country will come to its senses and put someone at least vaguely competent into the White House, and our policies will change. And America will be a safer place for Jews and many other minorities.
I certainly hope you're right. I think it might be interesting to trace a little bit of the history of those migrations and the times where we had golden ages in other places, like the golden age we've enjoyed in America. I've been talking about that for a long time, over the last 50 years, maybe even longer. But we certainly hope this is just a transitory phenomenon. It's just a weird time, I think, for a lot of Jews.
Well, it's a weird time for a lot of Americans.
That's for sure. Tom, thanks so much. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
Introducing Taste of Judaism, offering everything you ever wanted to know about Judaism but never got to ask. Who was Abraham? What is the Torah? How long have Jews been around? What do Jews believe about life after death? Where does the concept of Brit covenant come from? In three upbeat, fun, inexpensive, informative sessions, Taste of Judaism brings the joy of Jewish life and learning to you. You'll study with Rabbi Sam Kohan and learn what Jewish values, spirituality, and community are all about, and have a great sample of delicious Jewish foods. Classes are offered at La Cholla and Tangerine in Oro Valley, and all classes are open to everyone, Jewish or not. Best of all, Taste of Judaism is offered free of charge, but you must pre-register. No cost to you, and the learning is invaluable. Free, but you must pre-register by calling 520-276-5676 or emailing execbeitsimcha@gmail.com or going to www.beitsimcha.tucson.org and signing up. Hundreds of thousands of students worldwide have taken Taste of Judaism. Why not join them? No obligation, just an energetic and great instructor, free food, fun, and a wonderful introduction to Jewish life. Call 520-276-5675 to register for Taste of Judaism, the most popular and effective introduction to Jewish learning and life. Call 520-276-5675 for your very own Taste of Judaism.
Time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. David complained to his doctor that after 22 years of marriage, his sex life was not exciting anymore, and his wife, Sadie, didn't get excited. The doctor gave advice. As soon as you get home from work, Sadie opens the door, throw her to the floor, rip off her clothes, and have your way with her. The next week, David returned to the doctor and asked, David, did you do what I said? Yes, doctor, David replies. And did Sadie enjoy it? Asks the doctor. She did, says David. But not as much as her Mahjong group did. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well and share it with your Mahjong group. And now, a word of Torah. This week we read the portion of Yitro, the great moment of the revelation at Mount Sinai, including the climactic events of the Ten Commandments and the theophany at Sinai, most direct revelation of God to the people of all time. It's a testament to brevity and concision, this portion, just a few paragraphs, the Ten Commandments. These few words, the Aseret HaDibrot, have become the essence of Western religious experience ever since, our most complete connection to God. But in today's world, the entire concept of revelation is complicated and challenging for most of us. Do you personally believe in revelation at all? That is, that God revealed or reveals a greater power, will, or plan to us directly? Skeptics, which at heart includes most Jews, I think, can highlight a series of improbabilities in this central tale of the epical Jewish narrative of revelation. Are we to believe that at Mount Sinai, God revealed God's own essence to us directly? That somehow, in a supernatural way, a group of Israelite freed slaves communicated directly with a being much greater than themselves? And it only happened once, more than 3,000 years ago? Are we also to believe that not only did the Israelites think God connected with them, but also that God spoke actual words, and our ancestors not only understood the words, but committed them to memory forever? Clearly, our tradition teaches that there have been moments of overwhelming connection to God, and the greatest of these is the Ma'amad Har Sinai, this event standing at Sinai, which most people believe took place, if it happened at all, about 3,200 years ago. Our ancestors certainly believed God communicated directly with them, and that a certain covenant, a moral contract, was created in that spectacular moment. You know, there are many ways to view revelation. While the text of Parshat Yitro, the Torah portion of Yitro, this week's portion in Exodus, sees the experience of Sinai as unique, filled as it is with dramatic pronouncements, lightning, thunder, earthquakes, and so on, Jewish tradition has always taught that each one of us stood at Sinai, including all the generations of Jews not yet born. Clearly, that's not literal. But what it means is that, in other words, we are all participants in revelation in our own way. Just as we all must see ourselves as having come out of Egypt as freed slaves, so we all must come to understand our relationship with God directly. Revelation, God's will revealed to us for our own lives, must be given to us and accepted by each of us directly. My own grandfather, Rabbi and Professor Samuel S. Kohan, had a concept of progressive revelation that each of us in every generation has the ability to conceive of and perceive God in his or her own way. Moses' generation called it the revelation of Sinai. Our generation might call it divine inspiration or even creativity, a way to channel the divine energy that flows through our world always and sometimes gifts us with a spark of genius or greatness. In this revelation today, is that what revelation means today for you or me? Maybe. When we feel a remarkable connection to the universe that allows us to create, to write, to sing, to play music, to dance, to love, we are experiencing a kind of revelation. When we feel unlimited and amazing love for a child, a spouse, a friend, it is an experience of revelation. God is revealed to us in the holiness we can touch in our own lives. Revelation simply means knowing God's presence through beauty, inspiration, caring, and love. May we each be blessed with these experiences of revelation in our own lives, in whatever form they come. This week, and every week. When we return in a moment on To Jewish, our guest, Shmuel Rossner, explains what it means to create a contemporary guide for the Jewish perplexed and why that's important right now. Find out when we come back in a moment here on To Jewish.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from Rabbi Sam Kohan.
Tel Aviv clock counting the days hostages have been held by Palestinian terrorists in Gaza finally stopped last week after 843 days. Hostage Square at last can rest. The body of the last Israeli hostage murdered by Hamas has been located and returned for burial, marking the true end of the long nightmare that began for Israel October 7, 2023. Ron Gvili was murdered by Hamas Palestinian terrorists on October 7th, but they ghoulishly held his remains hostage until last week. The IDF had been searching for Master Sergeant Gvili ever since the ceasefire with Hamas began back in October, when the final living hostages were returned home. In Israel, Yitzhak Gvili, the hostage's father, paid an emotional goodbye to his son in front of his coffin. "You had the option to stay home, but you said to me, 'Father, I'm not going to leave my friends to fight alone.' You came out, and you need to see the honor you have here. All the people who brought you, all the police are here with you. The entire army is here with you. The entire nation is here with you. I'm proud of you, my son," Yitzhak Gvili said. Ron Gvili's sister Shira earlier told the Hostages and Missing Families Forum, "I feel an insane sense of relief. I feel relieved. I'm sad. I'm very sad it ended this way, but it had to end at some point. I'm so happy he's coming back home." The retrieval of Gvili may bring closure to his family, and it finally ends Israel's hostage agony. With the return of Ron Gvili's body, more than 2 years after his murder, Israel reopened the Rafiah crossing, Rafah crossing it's called also, from Gaza into Egypt. There are signs there soon may be next steps taken in demilitarizing Gaza, disarming Hamas, and rebuilding the Gaza Strip. Jennifer Mnuchin, the chancellor of the University of Wisconsin, has been chosen as Columbia's next president. The co-chairs of the school's board of trustees announced last week she'll be the school's first Jewish leader since October 7, 2023, when Hamas brutally attacked Israel, causing the Gaza War and leading to the manipulated student protest movement in the U.S., where Columbia was an epicenter. Mnuchin, a legal scholar, served as dean of UCLA Law School of Law before moving to Wisconsin in 2022. At least two other candidates reportedly declined the Columbia position prior to Mnuchin's selection. She takes the helm at a delicate time for Columbia as it continues to reel from the fallout of the student protests, which included penalties from the Trump administration, rapid leadership changes, and ongoing fear and anxiety because of the anti-Semitism on Columbia's campus among many Jewish students. And in baseball, Alex Bregman, who opted out of a three-year, $120 million deal with Boston, signed a five-year, $175 million pact with the Chicago Cubs. It's the second largest contract ever signed by a Jewish ballplayer, behind pitcher Max Fried's $218 million contract in 2024. And that's the To Jewish news of Jews around the world. We are delighted to welcome back the To Jewish, our guest this morning. Shmuel Rossner is the author of an excellent new book, and by the way, a pretty easy read for a very seriously researched book at a very high level. It's called Why Am I a Jew? A Contemporary Guide for the Perplexed. I'll tell you just a personal observation. As a congregational rabbi now for a lot of years, when I started, everybody went to shul on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. If they were two-day-a-year Jews, at least they showed up, or certainly they showed up on Yom Kippur, having primarily worked in the diaspora in various places, mostly in the United States, mostly in Tucson these days, for a long time. And now there are plenty of people who belong to a synagogue who don't even go on Yom Kippur. So that religious element has kind of vanished for some people that call themselves secular Jews or cultural Jews, and it only reemerges when somebody dies or there's some anti-Semitic attack. Maybe they'll come to the synagogue to hear what the rabbi has to say. On the other side of it, there's an increasing focus on orthodoxy and a development, and this is Baal Tshuva movement's been going on a long time, but of really kind of extreme orthodoxy in some ways. Is this divide a crucial aspect of what you're thinking about here?
Well, we know that when people face, worse circumstances, they look for different ways to cope with them. So for some people will say, well, we do not want a diluted version of Judaism or Jewishness, and hence we have to either quit or recommit ourselves in a very intense way. For other people, the solution might be different. They can say, well, we are nominally Jewish, but it doesn't mean anything for us and we don't much care, and hence we don't culturally engage with our Jewishness, and it's very likely that their offspring, if not children, then grandchildren, will no longer even know that they come from a Jewish tradition. But for many Jews, and I would even say for a majority of Jews, the choice is somewhere in between. Most Jews do not want to become extremely Orthodox, either because of ideological reasons or because they don't think Orthodoxy is fitting with their lifestyle or with their desired lifestyle. But they also do not want to lose any touch with their tradition. They do want to preserve their tradition. They do value it in some way. And they look for ways that can help them express their affinity and their connection to Judaism without having to have a lifestyle that they really don't desire. So some people will replace the synagogue with other activities. They'll read books, they'll take tours, they'll go and visit Israel, they'll connect with other Jews, they'll think about literature and culture and music and other things. They'll find new meaning in an old tradition. And I think one of the things I'm trying to show in the book is that such accommodation is not new to the Jewish people. When you live through 3,000 years of history, you have to repeatedly get used to new circumstances. Sometimes these are, just circumstances in the most dramatic sense. You know, when Jews were kicked out of Spain, they had to get used to new places, new languages, new geography. When they lost the Second Temple, they had to adapt their culture to circumstances in which there's no temple. And now they have to readapt to the circumstances of a 21st century world in which religiosity is somewhat weaker, belief in a God in the traditional way is not as common. Israel exists. That's a change in the Jewish world. We didn't have it for many, many generations. The Jews didn't have a national home, and now they do. That's a change in circumstances. So all these changes force on all of us, all Jews, and it doesn't matter if you live in Tel Aviv, when I usually reside, or in Rome, when I'm currently located, or in Tucson, Arizona. You always have to think about your old tradition and your current circumstances and try to see how these two can fit together.
In exploring how Jews have thought about identity, you run the gamut. I mean, I think there's, 150 pages of text in your book, more or less, and then lots and lots of footnotes. By the way, I'm one of those people.
I was trying to make it readable. And
you did. I think you really did. I'm one of those people who loves the footnotes. I really liked your footnotes, too. But that's because, I wouldn't say that's for everybody. But you make it extremely readable to explore. This isn't about reactivity. It isn't about doing what your parents did. You get to make these choices.
How do you think this book is best used? It's a funny way to ask it, but how would you recommend people read this book?
No, it's an interesting question to think about. Again, I think it's an easy read in the sense that you can read it quite quickly. And it's built around questions. It's basically a book in which I try to explain seven questions. What is Judaism? Who is the Jew? What are Jewish values, etc.? Seven chapters. So a person can just look at the book and say, well, you know, I'm now struggling with the question of, you know, the question of anti-Semitism. There's one chapter in the book that deals with anti-Semitism. There are actually two chapters that are directly connected to anti-Semitism. One is about the reasons for which people hated Jews or still hate Jews. And one is about the question how we survive. Because many people wondered, and not just Jews, by the way, many people wondered about the ability of Jews to thrive and survive throughout so many years of, you know, persecution and troubles. And you know, haters trying to do all kinds of ugly things to communities around the world. So how did we manage? So the book, the chapter on survival, I think, I'll give it as an example of a typical chapter in the book. What do I do in this chapter? I say, okay, there are basically three schools of thought about Jewish survival. One is to say Jewish survival is, you know, it's an accident. Historian Arnold Toynbee famously called the Jews a fossil. You know, so many nations were created and then destroyed throughout history. And one of them, just by accident or mistake, was able to survive up until now. And probably one day it will also disappear like all other nations.
By the way, I want to note that Toynbee himself is a fossil now. Just I wanted to throw that in.
That is true. That is true. As a historian, he's no longer as fashionable as he used to be. So that's one school of thought. The second school of thought is to say, well, that's godly intervention. There is a God. God decided that the Jews must survive. There are many Jewish scholars and Christian scholars, by the way, and theologians who said the Jews survive because that's the plan of the universe. They must survive for various reasons, but by and large, this is a decision made by godly intervention. Then there's a third school of thought, which basically says, well, no, it's not God. God is a great explanation. It has one limitation. It only applies to people who actually believe in a godly plan.
Right.
There are many people who don't believe in such things, so they need to look for a different explanation.
The book is fascinating. Recommend it to anybody. It's called Why Am I a Jew? A Contemporary Guide for the Perplexed. Where can people go to find out more about you, Shmuel, and to find out more about the book?
Google my name. They'll find many, many ways to explore my past and my present. And they can find the book on Amazon.com. That's the easiest way. It's not a long book. And again, you can read it fast and easy. And then if you're interested, there are the notes, and the notes will take you through a journey that can last for many years.
Thank you so much.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
Introducing Taste of Judaism, offering everything you ever wanted to know about Judaism but never got to ask. Who was Abraham? What is the Torah? How long have Jews been around? What do Jews believe about life after death? Where does the concept of Brit Covenant come from? In three upbeat, fun, inexpensive, informative sessions, Taste of Judaism brings the joy of Jewish life and learning to you. You'll study with Rabbi Sam Kohan and learn what Jewish values, spirituality, and community are all about, and have a great sample of delicious Jewish foods. Classes are offered at La Cholla and Tangerine in Oro Valley, and all classes are open to everyone, Jewish or not. Best of all, Taste of Judaism is offered free of charge, but you must pre-register. No cost to you, and the learning is invaluable. Free, but you must pre-register by calling 520-276-5676 or emailing execbeitsimcha@gmail.com or going to www.beitsimcha.tucson.org and signing up. Hundreds of thousands of students worldwide have taken Taste of Judaism. Why not join them? No obligation, just an energetic and great instructor, free food, fun, and a wonderful introduction to Jewish life. Call 520-276-5675 to register for Taste of Judaism, the most popular and effective introduction to Jewish learning and life. Call 520-276-5675 for your very own Taste of Judaism.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week for another great edition of Too Jewish. And join us at Congregation Beit Simcha every Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. Shabbat morning services, Torah reading and Kiddush. All of our services are followed by delicious food. It's just Jewish. You can come in person or on our Facebook page, but you can't get the food on Facebook. Our playout this morning comes from the slightly ridiculous fun group called Schlock Rock. It's appropriate for Tu B'Shvat, that's tonight and tomorrow. And the song is called, well, Tu B'Shvat. My friends, Chag Tu B'Shvat Sameach. Have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of justice and peace.
Borei, borei, peri ha'etz. Borei, borei, peri ha'etz. Borei, borei, peri ha'etz. Borei, borei, peri ha'etz. Tu B'Shvat, Shvat, Shvat. Tu B'Shvat, Shvat, Shvat. Tu B'Shvat, Shvat, Shvat. Tu B'Shvat, Shvat, Shvat. It's Rosh Hashanah. For the trees, it's Tu B'Shvat, Shvat, Shvat. Say Shecheyanu, if you please, on Tu B'Shvat, Shvat, Shvat. A new fruit to eat is bliss. Do this mitzvah, you won't be remiss. So sing. So come and sing along with a rum bum bum bum, with a rum bum bum bum. Tu B'Shvat, Shvat, Shvat. Tu B'Shvat, Shvat, Shvat. Figs, dates and raisins, the land we're praising. Tu B'Shvat, Shvat, Shvat.
pomegranate. Israel's our magnet. Du bist Schwat, Schwat, Schwat. Oh, this is a festive time. Fruit is sweet, right off the vine. So sing this Du bist Schwat song. So come. With a rum bum bum bum. Du bist Schwat, Schwat, Schwat. Du bist Schwat, Schwat, Schwat. Du bist Schwat, Schwat, Schwat.
Too Jewish is sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.
Du bist Schwat, Schwat.